Do you have a question?
No.
Getting instructions.
Okay.
What do you need here?
Could we turn to item 9, discussion of Manhattan Water Board enforcement policy? Ferguson?
Okay. Good morning, board members. My name is Scott Ferguson. I'm a senior water resource control engineer on your staff. I'm also the supervisor of our enforcement unit and the enforcement coordinator for the region. And this morning, I'm going to briefly review our latest quarterly violations report, and then I'm going to set us up for what I anticipate to be a very good conversation regarding the future of our enforcement program. And I see this discussion as the first in a series of conversations intended to effectively address a number of issues or challenges the enforcement program has been facing of late. I want the majority of our time to be for conversation, and so let's get started. Quick overview. In fact, we can skip this. Already did that. Quarterly violations report covers from October to December 2012, and fortunately we had a relatively small number of violations during this time period, 37. 26 of those 37 have already been addressed with some type of enforcement action. And also the slide shows that we're putting the majority of our resources towards the majority of the high priority violations. A couple more bits of information I'd like to tease out of the report is that leading into the wet season, staff conducted a number of construction site inspections, and as a result, about 20% of the violations in this report are construction related. The good news is staff left these projects in much better condition than they found, and kudos for staff. Also, something that jumped out at me were the number of violations that Mollycor had, 10 total, all of them spill related. Staff has already looked at the causes of these, has seen a trend, and has asked for information regarding Mollycor's maintenance and inspection programs, as that's where we see room for improvement. The root cause of these violations lie there. The other thing that I want to just touch upon, there are a number of groundwater violations in this report, and the majority, if not all of them, are related to past releases, some of which are still ongoing, and I believe all of which are under some kind of active, are being actively released or addressed by staff. I now want to set us up for our discussion regarding the future of our enforcement program. And what has, in part, and I emphasize in part, brought us to today's discussion is a series of enforcement actions that have come before the board during the past couple of years, a revised enforcement program that includes a methodology for determining the liability. That was something new that we've all been going through. Also, we're looking at a more formal, I'll call it quasi-adjudicatory process for conducting our public hearings. That's introduced a lot more documentation, supporting documentation, a lot more formality in the process, and that's been something that's created some challenge for us. Developing and moving through these enforcement actions has brought to the surface a number of different challenges that the board and the staff are experiencing, and it begs the question, is there a better way to use our resources to achieve our enforcement objectives? And today I'm looking for your insights, your ideas, your feedbacks regarding that question and others. And to assist us, you've been provided a paper prepared by staff that looks backwards for a little perspective and then starts to contemplate the future. And that's a paper enforcement program discussion, I think is the title of it. It also presents a number of questions for discussion, and I think it will help guide our conversation that follows my presentation. Now, this is a little different approach than what staff typically does before you. When I've been before you before, I'm usually presenting issues on a case, and I'm giving you recommendations. I'm not providing recommendations today. We didn't want there to be a sense of any kind of constraint on our conversation that such recommendations might have created. Instead, I have questions, and I have some examples that might help us navigate our way through those questions and generate some good discussion. So with that, let's take a little look backwards. I want to point out that in the calendar year 2011, staff entered over 1,500 violations into the CWICS and SMARTS database. And that's the database that we use to track all activity associated with our core regulatory programs. So MPDS, non-15, land disposal, stormwater, and 401 certifications for the most part. And you can see we responded to about 37% of those. And the lion's share, point out real quickly, lion's share right here, were informal enforcement actions. So verbal, so phone calls, talking in person, staff enforcement letters, notices of violation. Jumping forward to 2012, we had a reduction, significant reduction in the violations that were entered in, and we had a greater response rate. But I'll tell you, we still didn't get to everything that cried for our attention. And again, the lion's share of our responses by number dominated by informal action. One more piece of background information I want to provide you is the relative time allotted to each individual enforcement action type. And this is where the pie slice labels get rearranged relative to the size of each piece. Our informal enforcement actions are all right down in here. Our formal take up, I'm just eyeballing, I'm going to say 95% of the pie. And this is on an individual basis. So, for example, when we're doing our work planning about this time of the year, and I'm looking and I see I have an ACL scheduled for next fiscal year, I'm allotting, at a minimum starting point, 300 hours to investigate, develop, and prosecute the ACL. Does not include follow-up time. So that's just to get it to you and get a decision. CDO, minimum 200 hours. An investigative order, 50 to 100. Compare that to a notice of violation, our strongest of informal enforcement actions. 16 hours, maybe 24. Some a little higher, a couple a little lower. But that gives you some perspective of how much effort it does take on these informal actions compared to these. Also, I think gives you a little insight why we do a lot of informal, and especially when it proves to be effective. And so that's the background. So based on our experiences and the data such that, like I just provided you, I've drawn some conclusions. I've identified some objectives. And, of course, those come with concerns and issues. And I've identified some of those. I just want to run through one of these conclusions and look at its issues and stuff briefly. One conclusion is that we have more non-compliance than our available resources can address. Now, one possible solution or a piece of that puzzle could be, let's work on increasing our compliance rates in the first place, reduce the amount of enforcement and non-compliance we have to deal with. This may be done by tracking, taking actions to strengthen the incentive to comply, or another way, create more deterrent. That may be accomplished with limiting what we take on for enforcement by strictly following narrowly defined priorities. Now, that comes with its own pluses and minuses. But what it does allow us, or would allow us to do a better job of, is to follow through in a timely and complete manner on those enforcement actions that we do initiate. And that helps develop an effective reputation for this agency, that if we do engage, we will see it to the end, and that has benefit down the line. But as I said before, these options and others come with potential issues, concerns, and questions. So what are those questions? Let's skip a couple slides. There we go. Well, these questions, in the paper that's been provided to you, it has some of those questions under the section titled Key Questions for Discussion, how appropriate. And I think they'll help us with our conversation in a little bit. The key subjects of these questions can be broken down into the following categories. Objectives for enforcement, penalties, penalties versus compliance, settlement, and enforcement processes. I'll give you just a couple of examples of more detailed questions related to those subjects. What are the board's objectives with enforcement? Is it deterrence? Is it compliance? Is it punishment? Something else? A combination. Another one is, how do you address hardship and disadvantaged communities within your enforcement program? Cost of compliance, how does that play? Ability to continue business, how does that play? Another one is, when is settlement appropriate? When don't you think it's appropriate? And finally, another one, how important is consistency within the enforcement program? So I'd like you to keep those, some of those questions and the other ones that are in front of you in mind for the rest of my presentation. And through my discussion of upcoming possible priorities or priorities for discussion, I think many of these questions will naturally rise into your mind if they're not already there. So let's look at the priorities that we've been considering. Now, these are ideas I think they all have merit. But for today's purpose, I'm putting them out there to generate discussion. And I want you to understand that. I have 8 priorities that I want to briefly review, maybe discuss how to refine a couple of them, discuss the possible issues on a couple of them, and look at the possible results from a couple of them. The paper, the enforcement discussion paper that you have, provides a lot more detail than I'm going to go into. But we can rely upon that as a reference document when we're having our conversation. So the first three I'm going to look at, the first three in this list right here, those are basically our current 3 priorities that we've identified and have been working with the last 2, 3, 4 years. And that they can be generalized with impacts to groundwater beneficial uses, impacts to surface water beneficial uses, impacts to beneficial uses due to inadequate capacity and pollutant controls. And when you start thinking about it, those are pretty broad, and they generate a workload that currently exceeds our capacity already. So that's something to keep in mind. They also create conditions where we have to consider the cost of compliance and the ability to continue business. It's one of our key questions for discussion. Another thing is we encounter, how do we address these violations when we're dealing with disadvantaged communities and individuals in a number of different ways? So that's how these questions pop up into our day-to-day operations. Let's look at some other possible priorities. Failure to implement stormwater BMPs, and I'm focusing primarily on the construction end of life here. And I want to spend just a little time on this one. The possibility, this possible priority issues and involves issuing an ACL before a discharge and its adverse impacts actually occur. And this is a change in how we do business today. What we do today is we go out there and we provide technical assistance on a repeated practice and by conducting multiple inspections. And each inspection can take up to, even if it's local, 10 hours to go perform it, document it, follow through on it. And so we go out there and we identify problems, and BMPs are not being implemented. We see if those aren't implemented, we have an imminent discharge to one of our surface waters. And so we provide direction to fix it. We go out again to verify it, and we see that it was fixed. but we see the same issues pop up again. And so we tell them to fix those. And we keep going out because staff has a sense of obligation that they don't want to see Lake Tahoe or any surface water polluted when it can be avoided. So an alternative method would be go out there maybe twice, provide that direction, that technical assistance. If you go out there a third time, enough, three strikes, it's time to escalate and escalate significantly, and you issue an ACL. It's limited in scope. You have, in this case, you would have three inspection reports for documentation. You'd have three violations. You're not going to have an excessively high liability amount to worry about, but you may send the message that, hey, you got to get it together. The positive result may be you get a discharger to return to sustained compliance, not just this season, but the following season. You may also get some other dischargers to take notice and not violate in the first place. There's that improvement in compliance rate. On the flip side, there may be some pushback. Wait, I'm used to seven inspections before anything gets really heavy on us. I'm used to technical assistance. Well, there would be an obvious reduction in that technical assistance, compliance assistance, that we typically offer and that is expected, I think, by the regulated community at this point. Question is, can we afford to keep providing that level of technical assistance, compliance assistance, and still be effective? It's one of those questions for discussion. A brief example, and all these potential priorities have real-life examples that we have dealt with as staff and as the board, is a Caltrans project on the south shore of Lake Tahoe. Here, staff felt an obligation to keep conducting inspection, 7 to 8 in total. And that's, once again, 10 hours a pop. That's 2 weeks of work. And it was simply to go out there and make sure the discharger was doing what the discharger knew he or she had to do. Plain and simple. Wasn't getting done. Kept going out there, seeing the same problem, just different location. So 7 to 8 inspections. Kept the lake clean. That was good. But an alternative approach would have been on the third inspection, say enough is enough. We're working on your ACL now. It'll be in the $30,000 range maybe. And once again, we come up with a much smaller ACL, much smaller supporting evidentiary package. You have seen packages, hundreds and hundreds of pages. And probably in that 80 hours that we spent doing inspections, we can put that package and that complaint out on the street. And we may immediately have a better response. Once again, there may be cries of, hey, what happened to my other 4 or 5 inspections before you got all upset? Change in business. Something to consider. Let's look at some other priorities, possible priorities. Failure to submit reports or complete reports that delay cleanup, restoration, or abatement activities. We just had one of those come before the board. Effectively using informal enforcement actions, but realizing when they're not being effective and be willing to quickly escalate up the line of enforcement. And then finally, timely and complete follow-through. And this one has its positive side. We can get that reputation. We're not going to let go of you. We're going to get the job done. But it comes back with, we may not get to all the significant violations that are out there. We may have to delay start to one. We may not take action against some. We have policies that say, hey, on certain priority violations, we need to do something. We have to figure that one out. But once again, we develop a reputation that we're not going to be pushed off a case, we're not going to go away, and it's better as a discharger that you comply earlier than later because we're there for the long run. And finally, the last one I'm looking at is ACLs must have violations that involve culpability. Currently, we have in the past, and we still have this policy or practice, we have issued liabilities where the discharger really didn't have any culpability. Things happen, discharger responds appropriately, but there is environmental damage, and we have issued liabilities largely based on that environmental damage. And so I can think of one a long time ago, the South Tahoe BUD with their pump station, Luther Pass. One more recently was the VBWRA settlement, that one of those discharge elements, you can make the case, you know what? Floods happen, they responded appropriately, and but there was environmental damage, and that was part of that settlement. It was a limited part, but a part nonetheless. So the question is, do we want to put our resources into that? Not all regional boards do. Some regional boards have a practice of, you know what, no culpability, no ACL. We got other things to do. Something to consider. A couple more things, and then I want to open up the conversation. First of all, I just want to summarize where we've been here. There's no perfect solution out there or set of priorities. I do think that there are some key actions we can start to take, and we're still sorting those out and trying to figure out what they are, that will lead us to a better pathway in the long run. But once again, as you're hearing briefly, they're not issue-free, they're not risk-free. So that's why I want to start this conversation. I want to emphasize the word start, because I don't see today being a one-and-done process. A couple more topics, and then we open up talks. Our SEP program is another area where I think there's room for improvement, where we can gain some efficiency. Once again, we're going to need to invest some resources above what we're doing now. But without that investment, I think we're going to waste resources that we don't have to run waste. So three ideas. We more actively solicit SEP proposals to put on our potential SEP list. We emphasize the need or the desire that we want them to be shovel-ready in nature. We also more actively manage our potential SEP list that's online so that it's more user-friendly for the discharger that's looking for a SEP, so that the discharger can go online, look, and go, there's one, there's one, there's one. Those are all three probably ones that are highly likely acceptable in my situation. Staff right now spends a fair amount of time in a lot of cases helping the discharger develop their SEP. And by a lot of time, I'm talking tens, 100 hours to get it ready. The other thing that we can do is promote shovel-ready projects. Promote and accept them, encourage them. And where this buys us benefit is it reduces the amount of staff time that is dedicated to SEP oversight. For those five-year SEPs, you don't want us spending hundreds of hours. You want us to spend maybe 10 or 20 hours total, because these things are ready to go, they have a dependable sponsor, and they're ready. It's a done deal. So we're simply crossing a couple T's and dotting a couple of I's and verifying that it was done on time. That's what would help improve things also. And finally, process and training. There's room for standardization, improved clarity, for choosing the appropriate enforcement action or response, for processes tied up in our enforcement program, and for procedures, such as like the hearing procedures. We're looking now at when do we do the most formal, full-blown hearing procedures? When does it feel like we can do informal, something a little lighter, where we're not putting hundreds of pages before you in documentation, where it's not quite the trial environment? There, some of the boards do have those heavy, light, and we're working on that as staff. We're also working on helping staff use our databases better to track the status of their requirements in these enforcement actions so that we can stay on top of them, so that they don't lapse. I know you heard about all the activity that's happening on all the other programs today. There's a lot of activity out there to keep track of. And if you're not careful, requirements will slip through. And that's just the reality. So I just provided training for our technical staff on how to better use the CWICS and SMARTS database to keep track of their enforcement requirements and due dates and the status of them so that we don't lose track of them. Also, we can plan ahead and make sure we have enough resources allocated ahead of time to respond to what we know is going to come in the door. Our enforcement actions, many of them generate a ton of more work. The CAO is just the beginning. You have 5 reports coming down the line as a result of 1 enforcement action, and those all need quick review response. Otherwise, we don't have the best of reputations out there, and things become stale. And further enforcement, if it escalates up to an ACL, becomes very big and unwieldy. And training. So I mentioned a little bit of training. We can improve our training. We have plans to do so. And that's because staff will be able to work more efficiently if they already know what to do instead of trying to learn it while they're developing a case. That's just smart common sense. So I realize I've thrown a lot at you this morning. There's even more details in our enforcement program discussion paper in front of you. But as I said earlier, I see this as the beginning of a series of discussions or conversations. Today's discussion is not part of a one-and-done process. We're not going to solve all the problems today. And with that, I'm going to place those questions, key questions for discussion, up on the screen in just a moment. And I have my 1 recommendation, but it's up to you. And that's that we start at the top of that list. And that completes my presentation. I would recommend that you use your papers. It's page 2. Right up on top it says key questions for discussion. So you can either start there, or if you have, I'll leave it up to you. But like I said, I'm looking for your insight, your ideas, your experience, what your thoughts are. I know everybody here has given it quite a bit of thought during the past couple of years based on our experiences and stuff. And I'm sure there's some ideas out there. I'm more than happy to hear them.
My suspicion is that to do justice to this, we need a day, maybe more time than that, because this is a very complex set of questions. I appreciate the presentation, and I appreciate they're both clearly very thoughtful. I don't know what the pleasure of the board is, and I don't know exactly how we worm our way into this question. So I don't know if people have comments just from the general presentation. Maybe that's a way to start, and that can give us some direction. And I see that Mr. Sandell does. So why don't we start there?
I'm sorry to not restrict myself to your questions, but
that's fine.
As Peter said, this is going to be much more lengthy than we have time for today, I believe.
Understood.
But I think there's one thing that we've discussed in the past that seems to be a missing element, which is you've pointed to it, which is the ability to have something between the ACL and all of our informal notices of violation and all that sort of thing, which have no financial penalty attached to them. And we've talked in the past about having some kind of ACL speeding ticket sort of thing, a minor that doesn't require full board action and possibly could even be done by an executive officer or possibly could be routinely approved by the board without a formal hearing. And I think that we ought to consider making a list of all the normal service violations that we encounter, like no hay bales or whatever, you know, not this, that, or the other thing not being in place, and attaching a dollar value to each one of those things. And you go out the fourth time, you say, okay, I'm starting on the ACL, and so far you're up to $1,024. And we'll be sending that to you in the mail, and you better pay it or we'll be out again. You know, and so, I mean, something that would go a lot faster, that would let the violations know that there are financial penalties involved, maybe not large, but there's nothing like getting a bill that you weren't expecting to get, even if it's relatively small, to get you to focus on something that you were kind of just sort of more or less blowing off and saying, yes, we'll take care of it, but maybe not now, you know, or and really abusing our staff time by having staff come out and teach the same lesson again and again, because they are not actually learning the lesson. They are following the instructions for a specific problem. The same problem slightly different happens right next door. They haven't generalized the lesson. They require staff to come out and teach them again, but they don't actually want to learn. Okay. And so if you start attaching money to that, they will probably start to learn.
Yes, we've already talked about that.
Well, we haven't done it.
Right, but what we're really looking at is basically a fix-it ticket with some money.
Yeah.
And at this point, and I think it might be in our discussion paper here, that does pursue or require change in legislation, but that is one of those possible priorities, is that we do pursue that as part of it.
To add, I think that there are ways that we might be able to set that up, and I think some other regions have, where the board gives authority to perhaps its AEO to settle certain kinds of violations up to a certain limit. And so maybe it's done something in that way, perhaps.
And we have that. Our executive officer has that authority granted by this board, and it's wide open authority. It's impressive. But we're still talking, I think, and we can talk about logistics, but I believe that is still issue the ACL, do the full-blown analysis, whereas I think Mr. Sandell is saying, hand them a citation, and it has a $500 amount.
I don't think the Office of Enforcement, Julie, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't always issue a complaint. Sometimes they just go straight to the discharger and say, you've done this, I will settle with you for this. And if it's a reasonable amount, and it hits them hard enough where it stings but doesn't necessarily make them want to fight, then that may be an effective way to do some of these.
It's along those lines. It's a sort of a process thought, but when we did this, and I realized that doing this in the DA's office and doing this here, I've come now to understand those aren't the same thing. When I first got here, I thought I knew everything that you needed to know about enforcement. Now I know what I knew isn't the same as this. If we keep on the same curve 2 years from now, I'll know I know nothing, and then you'll be able to work with me. But what we used to do, people would come to us and they'd say, here's a violation, and it would be an enforcement agency or public health or fish and game or the cops or whoever. And they would have some paper that indicated what this was about, and we would do what we call pre-complaint conferences, where we would call in people and say, here's the deal. You may remember your discussion with the fish and game wardens 3 weeks ago. They brought it to us to do something about it, and we intend to do something about it. So, but we want to give you an opportunity to sit with us and talk about how it worked out, what you think needs to be done. Here are our priorities about how you have to respond to this. And the first is clean it up. The second is make sure it doesn't happen again. And then at some point, the last, very last one was some sort of punitive penalty or whatever. And so by doing a process like that, we were able to do an awful lot of cases in which the first document we issued was a complaint attached to which was a stipulated judgment. So that the whole thing was done in a package before anything was ever actually filed. And in listening to, I don't think it's a perfect model, but in listening to some of the issues that you presented this morning, I think it might have applicability. One of the things we made clear was you're in violation of the law, that can't stand, and you're on notice of that right now. And so what I'm seeing is if you have to go someplace seven times, somehow or another, the person hasn't gotten the message in 1 through 6 that they are currently in violation of the law, that there are currently penalties for that, and that's going to have to be dealt with. And you are now on notice that you're in violation. And then what we would try to do is construct a list of things that have to be done, a time frame in which they would be done, get them to sign that document so they were on notice as to what was required by that, so people can't come back and say, gee, I didn't know, gee, I didn't get it, gee, I wasn't there when this came. And so I think that there's possibly some applicability to that sort of process. I get that it's really hard in your shoes to start out as a technical supportive helper agency. We want to help you work through problems. We want to give you technical support. And then all of a sudden you have to take that hat off and put on a hat with skull and crossbones and say, no, I'm not a helper anymore. I'm your arch enemy. But that's really very difficult to do. But I think it's doable if you introduce the concept of this is wrong, needs to be fixed, consequences if it isn't, let's get a solution and get it as quickly as we can.
I think that's helpful. And again, I think it's real helpful to hear. And one of the things that all of us, because we've all been with the Water Board for a long time, I think part of what happens in our own heads, because I think you're right, and you're onto something in terms of the reason I think we've been very reluctant to do what used to be referred to as simple ACLs is we found out that there weren't really any that were that simple. And I think we were reluctant to engage in those kind of conversations, to actually sit people down and say, under the water code, we can get you for $10,000 a day for every violation, for every handbill you didn't put down. And to just sit down with them at the point when there is only $30,000 worth of, you know, potential violations and say, we could find you today for $30,000. I think we've been partly reluctant to do that because of what you said about wanting to be helpful, but also I think fundamentally we haven't wanted to bluff because we didn't know whether we would get the board's support. If we showed up at a board meeting 2 months late, because if we had the conversation and we said to them, we could find you $30,000, so we think it'd be in your best interest to write a check for $15,000 right now and agree that you'll never do this again, you know, or have a stipulated agreement that says they're going to do certain things. We've been reluctant to do that because we knew that if they just said, you know, thumb their nose at us, then we would need to go the next step with a formal complaint, and we didn't want to bring a small penalty to you where you'd say, really, $30,000 for lack of hay bales or whatever. There was no water quality impact. You know, again, these are sites, this is helpful because I want to, because in the past, and whether we were...
This is
about our perception, right?
We have
a perception that if we bring something to you in the past, that if there was only failure to implement BMPs and no actual water quality impact, that it was just a preventative measure, that you were reluctant to impose ACLs for those kinds of violations. So this is why this is very helpful for
us.
Let me
make sure, because I think I understand, and I'm going to preempt Mr. Sandell, and I apologize. I know I'm not supposed to do that, but... I know, but I read that you're supposed to be the last guy in line.
Exactly.
So I'm going to cheat. Saying that this might be a helpful model, doesn't get us to saying to you, we'll impose a $30,000 penalty for hay bales. That's why this is going to take a long time to work through. Because,
well,
and then I'll let Mr. Sandell But my mentality is, if you're in violation of the law, you're in violation of the law. And if I'm an enforcement agency and you're in violation of the law, it's that's a clear picture to me. I know that might not translate. But you need first of all, a way to put people on notice that they're in violation of the law and what the consequences are. And you have to be absolutely, you know, if we call somebody in and said, we're thinking of filing a complaint, if we don't have a good meeting, we file a complaint that afternoon. So people knew. So that's a part of it. You've got to be sure how you process that then through and where it goes to consequences. You know, if I told somebody I want $180,000 because you fouled the creek, I can't get it because there's this guy in a courtroom that had something to do with whether or not I could get my $180,000. So we're going to have to figure out what this process is, the steps are, how you give us ranges of things in terms of enforcement costs that we can live with. But I can tell you this: if you do pre-complaint meetings and you're asking somebody for $30,000 for hay bales, you're probably not going to. We're probably going to be in front of the board. I would want to find a practical way that really does create an incentive at that pre-complaint moment for them to get their stuff together. Which means, in my mind, I'm sure this sounds strange as a member of the district attorney's office, but my lowest, almost on the floor priority for a result was penalties and punitive action. I wanted a permanent injunction against the person so they'd never do it again. To make it easier the next time they did it again. And I know that's not a tool here, but it's the kind of tool that I would look for to work with. But penalties, I've never been fascinated with penalties because they're disproportionate by their very nature. And so I would rather have a process that really incentivized immediate compliance. And I'm sorry, I certainly invite other comments from the board.
Well, I have to agree. I think my highest priority is compliance. And if it takes 7 visits out to a construction site or they're late filing their reports 7 times, they should get a traffic. There should be some consequences. I think 3 times is plenty. We can help them only so far.
And I'll say in my example, in what I have in my mind, definitely the parties that know what they need to do. There are a pretty large group of people, parties out there, that know what they need to do. They have a nice stormwater pollution prevention plan. There's what you need to do. It's clear. It's not rocket science. And you have organizations out there that overall they know what to do. It's just not a priority for them. They have other priorities. They want to build buildings, they want to build highways, they want to do other things. And we've had these conversations, and in many times it has taken either the outright threat where we're like, we're not bluffing, take us seriously, and we're talking potential big money because it's gone on 7-8 inspections and months, and we have too many examples of violations that, yeah, it gets scary now. Now you have $12 million potential North Star Mountain properties. Oh, wake up call. Well, damage had already been done at that point, but I think I hear what you say. You're willing to limit how much free advice we provide, how much can assistance we provide. There needs to be a limit to that. There needs to be an intermediate, see if we can develop that intermediate incentive to comply that has some little pop in it, financial pop in it. I think we can look at maybe the ACL methodology and look at the factors, how that is. Maybe it's an initial step to start ferreting out, well, how much are hay bales worth? I mean, we'd use hay bales, but it would be more serious. How much is that worth? How much does that come out? If we were to have to come before you, could we come up and say, hey, this is what it says. It appears to be reasonable on face value, and it appears to be enough to get the response we're seeing. I hear that pre-notice requirement clearly state what's wrong, what's at risk if you don't comply, and you got this much time. We have some tools to do that already in our enforcement tool chest. Maybe some modifications here and there, refinement. Once again, standardize it, train it, use it. So
I think be good not to overreach. That has happened more often than it should. $30,000 penalty for hay bales. Now, that's either a lot of hay bales or there's some gold involved or something. But I think that the board would have no trouble assessing reasonable penalties for lack of BMPs, but they have to be reasonable, proportional. So a couple of hay bales missing might be worth $2,500. That may not seem like a large amount of money, but it probably wouldn't take very long to process, and it could be, you know, not real here, just right through. And it sends the message, and it could send it a lot faster than the full board thing, which could take, we're looking at things that happened a year ago,
right,
to finally get to the board. I always wonder about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it took us a year to get here.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, yes, it's big money, but it just seems, it takes too long.
I think just preparing this presentation is that the need to reduce the scope. And this isn't all enforcement. It's not just ACLs that we need to do this. And this is why I say escalate quickly. Don't go 7 inspections and 7 NOVs and la la la. I mean, bump it up fast so that you don't get a big, huge liability case coming before the board. Super complex, super contested, just because of what's involved. And there may be liabilities that wind up coming before you just because someone wants to debate it on principle, even though it's only $2,500. But that's fine. I mean, it'll cost us more to prosecute it, but if we get the message out there, there may be 5 other dischargers that go, oh, God, they did follow through, even over $2,500, and, you know, I don't want to pay $2,500. Cost them time money to step up. So it's more than that. I think we can come up with something, and that's what I'm hearing, is put some energy into that.
Something that I didn't see here that I thought would be helpful, too, is if there are certain kinds of enforcement, you know, if it's BMPs or if it's, you know, certain types of violations that we're seeing frequently, maybe, you know, that is something that's kind of highlighted for the board, that we're, you know, either seeing a lot of construction sites that aren't falling through on their SWIPs, or maybe we're seeing a lot of negligence spills because of they put off infrastructure repairs, or, you know, those kind of, if we get a sense of what those types of violations are, I think it's helpful too. Because I know there's certain things that informal enforcement, it works well for many, many types of violations, but there's certain types of violations it's not going to work, that you have to do the big enforcement action.
I mean, when you see, like, impacts to groundwater, beneficial uses, I mean, typically, if there's public health, if drinking water supplies are impacted, you're looking at a CAO for replacement water, step one. You're looking at a CDO, or time schedule order, to address the source. You're looking at maybe another CAO to clean up. Now, if everything goes smoothly, then we may make the decision, it may be the decision of the board. You know what, yes, you polluted, you discharged, you caused damage. But once we called you on it, you complied with our enforcement actions. There's another decision to be made out there. Do you go after them for money for what they did in the first place, the original damage? We've done it on a couple of occasions. and I anticipate we'll probably do it again. But you know what? You want to talk about a year later. I mean, I know Los Angeles County Sanitation District, perfect example. Years later. And but that's what you're, and groundwater is a nasty one. It's a tough one. It takes time to get these things in place. And the liability question is out there.
Scott, I think you all recognize that there are these big issues, but I think what we've really been addressing here is how to get at some of these smaller ones and make our whole process more efficient.
Yes. And once again, I'm looking, I think, to improve our reputation so that people out there, I've told staff, I go, 85-90% of the people want to do what's right, knowing what that is. That's where compliance assistance, technical assistance can come in. And sometimes with a little extra squeeze of, if you don't comply, it's going to hurt. And that's enough to get you up to 90%. I'd like to get to where we're just dealing with the worst of the worst. And we have the resources to do that. Because we even got a few of the worst of the worst to come around and go, God, they are tigers. They do stick with it. And they may not get to everything, but God, if they get to me, I'm toast. So,
I think if I understood what Ken was talking about, it might be useful as you look at the number of cases that are sort of not the sort of routine and find out whether you can track them and sort of see where the tipping points are, where your technical assistance has created a good outcome. If we get beyond this point, this is really a signal that this is technical assistance is not what the issue is, or lack thereof. And maybe that can give you some kind of clues about how you set up the process for those kinds of things and where you make your shift. I think it's hard. There's two things that I think are hard for me as a board member. Number one, the system seems to be designed for the worst possible set of circumstances that could happen at any given place and time. So it would be as though you designed the entire criminal justice system with the notion that every case was a multiple murder, and that's not the case. And so I think that when you talk about overreach or overkill, I think that happens because the system that we function in a lot of ways, is designed for the worst of the worst. Designed to deal with really major, big things, doesn't seem to have, and we need to really address what we do about disadvantaged communities and hardships and things like that, so that we have a more consistent way to look at it as a board. And so I think we need to be mindful of the idea that there's this whole not worst of the worst area down here that we'd like to try to get to, and we're just going to have to talk through how we do that and how we deal with the disadvantaged community. Because it isn't the same as somebody who just says it's a cost of doing business. You know, I understand that there are people that just say, hey, it's cheaper to buy time and then go pay lawyers and pay penalties than it is to come into compliance right there, right then, at that time. But that's not everybody.
No. And we try to sift through that. I think some of the enforcement actions that you've seen come before you of late, I mean, there's been a lot of assistance. There's been a lot of time. And each case is different. I mean, you got all kinds of different factors. You got disadvantaged communities, but you got others that maybe they appear to be. But how do you ferret that out? that's one thing I ask, that I question is, how do we ferret that out? What evidence would the board want to see someone crying wolf when they cry poor, as opposed to staff going, no, they're not. Trust us, they got money, or they have assets, so don't buy it. But how do you, what's the board want to see? And that's something, like you said, Mr. Pumphrey, it's going to take time to kind of iron those out. That's that clarity in procedures, evidence, requirements. But I would like to only be bringing the worst of the worst before you. And with, if it's penalties or actions, whatever it is, that are appropriate in your eyes. I want success because that's once again going to put that incentive to comply out there, that there is consequences for non-compliance, whatever those consequences may be. They're not always financial right off the bat. So,
Mr. Dias, do you have any thoughts?
I agree that the process needs to be speeded up, and I like the idea of issuing ACLs earlier but at a reduced rate, and if possible, to speed up the process even more, take advantage of any authority our executive officer has.
Just going to that, that gets back into escalating quickly the enforcement, NOV, hey, we really mean it, boom. That automatically will lend itself to a much, maybe it's 30,000 max potential, and we're going for a percentage of that after we look at the methodology. It lends itself to that. That's what I like about like the preventative ACL and the stormwater BMP example I provided. I'm dealing with maybe 30,000 max in that scenario. And that's and we're asking for a percentage. And so I think it gets to that. And there's one other thing. It'll come back into my mind on just using that informal enforcement. A lot of we do. You saw how much informal enforcement we do, and it does do a ton of work. Even at an hour for staff enforcement letter, if you issue 95 of them, that's still 95 hours. It takes time, but in many cases, we're addressing a ton of non-compliance out there effectively with stuff that you don't see. And I would like you to understand that, and I think you do, that once again, we're trying to bring just the ones that we think really rise, and we're trying to bring them faster. And if we stay on top of a more limited number of enforcement cases, we can deliver more quickly at more reasonable levels, and I think be more effective.
I'm wondering, sitting here, we're not going to resolve this today, and I'm trying to think in my mind of what a reasonable next step is, whether or not it is a meeting, workshop, something where there's a large block of time available for the whole board to enter into this discussion, or would it be useful to have a smaller working group of the board that could discuss this, maybe focus some of the discussion for the whole board, maybe try to posit some answers to the questions that are posed here. And I kind of think it might be more efficient to do the latter if people are willing to do that. I don't know what the sense is of the board. I would be willing to participate in some process like that. If there's perhaps some other person, Eric, maybe we could figure out how to schedule that and then and sit down with staff and just spend half a day or whatever trying to come up with some ideas, trying to narrow down some of the focus, get a better understanding really of, you know, what are these little cases as opposed to the bigger cases, can we describe them, and then bring something back for the board for a little bit narrower discussion.
Be a good idea. Other regional boards do that as well, to the subcommittees.
That's an excellent idea.
Perhaps we could try to set up that meeting with us and the staff between now and June, and maybe report back what kind of progress was made, and then maybe in June schedule whatever needs to be scheduled for the full board to deal with this and give them whatever materials and talking points and possible definitions have come out of that discussion with staff. And certainly, I would certainly like to encourage the participation of people from Sacramento, because A, you're a vital part of the process, and B, more eyes are better eyes often. And so I'd like to be inclusive in that way. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Pomfrey, members of the board. Just like a make a couple of comments here, and it comes somewhat off of what you said there about how we're treating every case as it's a double murder, we're dealing with this from both sides, from the prosecution side and the advisory side, and I think it would be useful for us to think some about what's the risk of being overturned by a judge on a case that we prosecute, that the board makes a decision on. You know, what's the likelihood of that? What are the consequences of that? Because from the prosecution side, you know, the direction that we're getting from our counsels and the head of the Office of Enforcement, and I wish that he was here today and hopefully in this subsequent meeting that Chris Kerrigan could be participating in, that is that, you know, we're going into it, we've got to have every single thing documented to the T, the evidence supporting the case, and that's a tremendous burden that often is not commensurate with the scale of the violation or of the issue or the potential fine that might be brought forward. So, and then on the other side, you know, the advisory team is and counsel is likewise, you know, setting up to support the board in the most watertight manner possible. So there's, you know, we have to think somewhat about risk management here in our enforcement.
Well,
that's all I have to say.
That's an entirely valid point. Yeah. You know, filing decisions are tricky, and sometimes there are cases that you start out you're really excited about, and you discover you can't file. They're just, it's bad facts make bad law. You don't want to do that. So I understand that. I think it's sort of, I know all those processes are out there, and it's a sort of a way of acknowledging those so that everybody understands those processes are out there, and I'm certainly willing to accept at face value when someone says to me, this is the best we can do, this is the most we can do, this is the best filing we can make. I'll accept that as face value if that's the explanation for what we have. So maybe that, again, that's part of sort of filling in the process so everybody knows how we got to be where we are.
So following up on Chuck's point, I'm happy to, I'm Julie Macedo from the Office of Enforcement. Following up on Chuck's point, I agree that, you know, we have to give everyone the opportunity. The process is built for the double murder case, you know, whether it's a sort of speeding ticket ACL, the opportunity for a full hearing is usually there, whether it's a $5 million case against Caltrans or, you know, the $100 case for failure to implement stormwater BMPs. I tend to do the $5 million cases against Caltrans, but I will say, if I participate or someone else from the Office of Enforcement participates in this meeting, I think it will be really helpful, but I warn you that we're probably going to push you a little bit on enforcement, because some of the comments that arose during Scott's presentation, I interpret as a little bit contradictory to some of the comments given after the item 8 presentation. And what I mean by that is, we got done listening to a 2-hour presentation saying staff is so overworked, you guys are great, I hesitate to add another list of priority, watershed is really important, the political issues of trucking water down to, you know, from Northern California, and yet please don't overreach, enforcement is only a small percentage of what we do. And don't look toward penalties, look toward injunction. And I realize that those are concerns for the board that has to sort of deal with, you know, a lot of people who they live with on a daily basis. But on the other hand, this is an agency that is usually dealing with a lot of violations and people who are aware of how to game the system. So to the extent that you're saying enforcement staff, and really, it's limited to enforcement staff. Speed up your system, do 3 inspections rather than 7, and immediately do something. That's hard. And if a settlement doesn't work, take it to a hearing. But be sort of ready to acknowledge that we may not back you up. That's a hard message, and that was what Lori's comment was directed. And it's not blaming. It's an acknowledgement. And so I think when Scott was saying our reputation, that's sort of what the comment was directed at. So I wasn't the attorney on Spalding Track, but Office of Enforcement sort of discusses matters after they happen. That's something that we're aware of. So, you know, I kind of listened to Scott's presentation with a clear mind, and this is the first, you know, yesterday's was the first Region 6 matter I had. But it definitely would color what matters I took before the Region 6 board and sort of how cooperative I wanted to be, how much penalties I wanted to seek. I mean, I'm limited by the new enforcement methodology, but being, you know, before you and sort of worried that everything would be considered by the board after the discharger gets done shooting it down, that's intimidating. I mean, I usually am before you saying staff has done a great job, we've looked at it really fairly, we feel the evidence to support it. Coming before you and sort of having done all this work and knowing that I have a limited amount of resources, a limited amount of staff, and I'm taking the best cases, and then you're going to say, but we don't feel like, you know, taking penalties, that's tough. So if we have these follow-up meetings, know that the Office of Enforcement Representative is going to push you guys a little bit more than maybe your current position is willing to go. And I totally understand, you know, doing the little cases, but keep in mind the big cases have a pretty significant water quality impact, and we, you know, we have to deal with at least the process issues for everyone as a whole.
Well, I'm wanting to bite my tongue completely in half. Welcome your participation. And if you feel no one has been satisfied with several of the proceedings that have occurred in the last 2 years, and everybody has known that no one has been satisfied with that, what has not happened has been a discussion of what happened, why it happened, and why people are not satisfied with it. So that's what I think we're trying to do with this, and that's what gave rise to this.
So I'm glad the discussion won't be a vacuum. You know,
no.
It won't be a vacuum with just the people. You know, if we're there, we can at least say, you know, this is where we're coming from. Because if it was just, you know, Region 6 and you, and then we sort of aren't there, I think it's great that you invited us. Just know that we're gonna be spoilers and sort of pushing you a tiny bit. So.
Well, I mean, no. It, it, it's,
it'll be what it'll be. And I think it will be an interesting discussion. And I think it will be good for everybody to have a better sense of what their expectations are. And I think it will be good to have everyone have a better sense of how you go forward into situations where not everybody gets what they ask for. We don't get what we ask for often. The question is, how do you deal with that? Because this is not law. So this is not, you come in front of a judge, awful guy, and you just know you don't want to be there anymore, and you don't want to be in that department, and you go fume about it. You know, we have to do a lot of different things that go together. And I want to make sure that the time that's spent on enforcement and the time that's spent before enforcement when things turn into enforcement is extremely well spent, and that whatever we need to understand and process to make that happen, happens. So I'm not saying we can't do enforcement, and I'm not saying we can't penalize people, and there are, trust me, I know that there are people who need to be penalized, and I've dealt in figures up to $10 million, so I get numbers.
And I'm your gal.
So I think we need to have this meeting. I'm really glad that you're going to be there. I'm sure Kim will be there. And I'd like to have a process that we can just say, this is how it happened. It's happened. Every one of these cases happens the same way.
And I don't think I heard the board saying that they didn't support enforcement staff in penalizing people that come before the board, but I think it would be inappropriate right here for them to say, yes, you know, we would, you know, do the math on this. Or I mean,
and
I think it has to be weighed on its own. And I think, you know,
I totally understand. And I just wanted to draw that distinction to say, you know, you have to be careful. And a hay bale case, $30,000, you know, we don't even do the maximum anymore because of the methodology. And so to the extent that the board is, you know, new to the methodology, you know, that's a maximum and not a recommended. You know, I totally get it. But those statements to enforcement staff are like, well, wait a minute. The number we start with, we never feel is overreaching. We always feel like we go through the methodology and, you know, the number we recommend is what we recommend, not, oh, the board's going to knock it down some more. So that's what we're
doing. What I think, what I'd like to do then is just talk briefly with the executive officer who's been gracious enough to say she would coordinate setting up this first meeting. We'll shoot for having a work product for report back in June. My suggestion would be that we try to meet as soon as we can so that if we discover we can't solve the problem in the first 3 hours, we have an opportunity to meet a second time so that we really bring something. I want to bring something home in June. So I appreciate greatly the work that went into the presentation and the materials, and we're going to come up with something.
Just then, for the subcommittee, are you identifying people for the
I believe it's Mr. Sandell and I.
Okay.
And I appreciate the feedback. That's exactly what we're looking forward to, or looking for. I'm looking forward to meeting with the board, the subcommittee, and continuing to make progress. I mean, we have plenty of examples if we need to draw upon them and have that dialogue that you said has been missing. I can say that we've had some feedback on following some of our enforcement actions, but more in-depth feedback would be greatly appreciated as provide some perspective in looking forward and identifying how we want to move forward. So I appreciate the board members putting their time and resources forth and working with us.
Thank you very much. The last agenda item is report by Water Board Chair and board members. Mr. Diaz?
I have no report.
Mr. Jardine?
No report.
I have just one quick thing, actually two. One's really quick. I have potential dates for WQCC, which are September 30 and October 1st, October 25, 24 and 25.
October 31 and November 1st. So if you can get back to me about what dates, if any, are most convenient for you. I can tell you that if it's not the September date, I'm probably going to be looking for someone who can participate from the board. I know I definitely can't do it on the 24th and 25th of October.
Then I prefer September.
Pardon?
I prefer September.
Oh, no, that's not what I meant. Well, I just fell in that right there. Yeah, I put my foot out of the rabbit hole. And the other thing I just wanted to really briefly mention was that on June 11th, 12th, and 13th, there will be the second annual Sierra Water Summit. This is a joint production of the Sierra Water Work Group, Sierra Nevada Alliance, Sierra Nevada Business Council, Sierra Nevada Conservancy, Inyomono IRWIMP, and the State Bar Environmental Law Section. And so it's a three-day workshop, which is designed to focus on water issues in the Sierra as a whole. One full day will deal with disadvantaged communities and tribal matters. And then the other 2 days have topics about water planning, watershed management. There's a website for that. I think it's going to be a really good program. We're really looking forward to it. The State Bar is really happy to be a partner this year for this, so there'll be, I think it's a pretty interesting discussion, and it's in Kings Beach. Thank you very much. I hope that if we're all good at the meeting about enforcement, that we might get ice cream, and the meeting is adjourned.